Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. You know, warfare has been a part of human activity since we first stood up on our hind legs, and humans have applied their tool-making skills to continually developing and improving the technologies with which we wage war. It took tens of thousands of years to advance from throwing rocks to shooting arrows to rifles to artillery, but the pace has quickened over time, especially recently. And since the start of the last century, several new categories of weapons of war have entered the arsenals of mankind: aircraft, and chemical and biological weapons, and nuclear weapons are the big ones. The most recent addition to the weapons of war, though, is cyber warfare. And this might be thought of as a new category of weapon entirely, since cyber weapons don't kill people directly. Instead, they attack the systems upon which technologically advanced societies depend for their survival. They don't require direct, visible attack. They're wielded in a stealthy way under the table, so to speak. And compared to armies and navies and air forces, they're very inexpensive. Even small groups of people can wield these weapons. But they are very effective and can affect large populations and even whole countries at once. Cyber warriors can attack everything from banking systems to factories to air traffic control to communication and computer networks and the internet, and to major infrastructure such as water treatment facilities, oil and gas distribution, and even the electric power grid upon which nearly everything else depends. And that's what we're going to talk mainly about today: cyber warfare threats to the electric power system and the current state of cybersecurity in countering those threats. My guest is Dr. Masoud Amin, an electrical and computer engineering professor at the University of Minnesota, who's one of the world leaders in this field. In fact, he's recognized as the father of the smart electric power grid and as a top expert in many aspects of cybersecurity. Welcome, Dr. Amin.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lewis. Honored to be here.
So nice to have you on. This is going to be interesting. So first, could you explain a little more about what you do and have done in this area we're talking about?
Thank you. I was born in Tabriz, Iran, northwestern part of Iran. And interestingly, the former Soviet Union did something very similar that they're doing in Ukraine to my hometown in September of 1941. Under the guise of Nazis and German spies operating in Iran, they invaded, even though Iran was a non-combatant, independent nation. They did, and they occupied northern part of Iran, and then they set up a puppet government for many years. My parents were medical doctors, and I'm the youngest of four. I moved to United States, to New York, Cornwall and Hudson, 44 years ago, before revolution. And I worked on, basically, first part was on defense networks for the U.S. Air Force, Department of Defense, Army, Navy, Marines, on combat logistics systems from 1982 to 97, on what is called command, control, communications, computers and intelligence, commonly called C4I. And then later on in 97 to the present, I moved it to civilian applications, how to secure our critical infrastructures for electric power and energy, communication networks, water and transportation and finance, and also to some extent risk assessment and the functions that chief technology officers or chief information officers do for the last 25 years.
Fascinating career so far. And as we're taping this show, as you said a minute ago, Russia is still invading Ukraine, and what hangs over our heads in the U.S. and Europe is not only the possibility of a nuclear World War III, but probably more likely the possibility of Russia launching a variety of cyber attacks against us in retaliation for tougher and tougher sanctions that we're levying against him and his cronies in his country. So do you think that's likely? And if so, what would be the most likely forms of cyber attack?
As my old friend, I haven't been in contact with him for a while, Richard Clark, the former cybersecurity czar under Presidents Reagan, President George Herbert Walker Bush, President Clinton, President George Walker Bush used to say, digital Pearl Harbor, he called it. Cyber is something that we often don't appreciate. And we often take security of our communication systems, more recently, internet or smartphones, for granted. In a nutshell, for your listeners, the sky isn't falling, but we are not bulletproof. The Russian Federation has had a long history of state-sponsored cyber attacks on the United States, and many parts of the world. And the Russian Federation has no hesitation to use all mode, physical, kinetic, and also cyber and infrastructure attacks on any nation. The first initial cyber operations by Russian Federation was distributed denial of services called DD or S that they did. And that was in 2007. And Estonia was the target of that. So we are talking about, my goodness, 15 years ago, they used cyber attacks. And they're before that, but in the interest of time, Estonia was the target of those cyber attacks, and most observers assessed, although Russia never accepted it. And the targets in Estonia ranged from online banking, media outlets, to the government websites, services, email services, and power grid. Russian Federation did that in Georgia, if the listeners can remember, when Georgia was attacked in 2008. Georgia was the victim of large-scale again attack that agents, which we can talk about later, what agents they have, what actors they have, they attacked their government, financial, power grid, and media outlets, including the National Bank of Georgia. And it was shut down for 12 days.
Wow. So do you think, I mean, I know it's just speculation, but if there were to be an array of Russian cyber attacks, would a bunch of them come at once, like those you described in Estonia, or would it be one thing to start, or is that just totally speculative and you would have no idea?
It would be speculative, but it is within their capabilities. Although they have many, many weaknesses, many, if you will, holes in their system, corruption, other things that we can get into, but they have shown that over the last 20 years or so, they have increased the number of personnel, from what we know from our intelligence agencies, personnel capabilities and capacities to undertake a wide spectrum of cyber operations. The folks who cover that, including me, we believe that this framework makes it even more competitive among their agencies for resources, personnel, and influence. Also with the private sector, similar to salaries are much lower in the public sector than private sector, to conduct similar operations without any apparent awareness of each other. Everything that you have heard about and you have read about, they have the military intelligence equivalent of our Defense Intelligence Agency. It's called GRU, which is the main directorate for general staff, which is the military intelligence agency. And they have actually our own U.S. government indictment identified two primary GRU cyber units for conducting attacks on us in the elections, from the elections in 2016, and other activities that they have done malicious to us. And also there are advanced, what is called APT. You hear that a lot in cyber warfare. APT is advanced persistent threats that they pose to us in our critical infrastructure, and they hire others and they operate under terms that your listeners can look into, such as Fancy Bear, Voodoo Bear, Sandstorm, and Czar Team. There's also a foreign intelligence service, SVR they call it, that is Russia's primary civilian foreign intelligence. And they actually hire others, and they're under the radar, and they have other units that have operated something called Cozy Bear that you probably can be Googled, and the Dukes, like Dukes of Hazzard, Dukes that can be Googled. So there's a plethora, a wide range of spectrum of actors within their community. There's also a Federal Security Service, FSB, which is their primary domestic security, responsible for internal security and counterintelligence. And Federal Protective Service, FSO, and there's also an Internet Research Agency, and many other organizations, private. There are at least a dozen or so that I can name what they do, how they come to, and more recently, we have identified who is actually is doing the malware, Trojan horse, and so on in systems. However, they are not perfect. there are many weaknesses: corruption, lack of money, and high level of, if you will, challenges recruiting qualified staff and so on. They're sophisticated, but there are holes in their Swiss cheese.
Okay, so, you know, my mind is reeling trying to absorb the list of acronyms you just went through, but it sounds basically that. Like it's very decentralized. Their capabilities are very distributed, which can be a good thing if they're coordinated, but it sounds like they are largely uncoordinated, which can be chaotic, which is a good thing for us if it's the case. But I suspect that different units have different specializations from what you're saying and can be targeted in different ways. But let's move on. I said at the outset that we would focus on the electric power grid, and that of all the various systems that can be threatened is one of the central ones that could do the most damage if it's really effectively attacked. And that's where, as I said also, that you're considered to be the father of the smart electric power grid in this country and worldwide maybe. So what are the vulnerabilities of our electric power distribution system as far as cyber warfare goes?
Thank you. Without providing a blueprint for attacks against our systems, I happened to be less than a mile from the Pentagon on 9/11, on that Tuesday morning, presenting to the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy and other three-letter agencies when tragedies occurred. Post that, I became responsible for all the security research and development for all the North American utilities at the Electric Power Research Institute. When I got back finally on Friday to Palo Alto, where it's headquartered at, by Sunday, I got to work immediately on that afternoon, gathered 30 colleagues with background checks. I myself had top secret clearance at the time, that I knew through encrypted PGP encrypted lines, which I set up with help from so many other people. And I couldn't leave DC, so I'm stuck. I thought also, what can I do to help? Because electricity is the linchpin of our modern society as a multi-pronged attack on our civilization, on our economy, on our nation. Mm-hmm. So anyway, long story short, post that, we did a comprehensive assessment. And by Sunday night after 9/11, I had two piles of reports from utilities, some of them close to your listeners and to you. Mm-hmm. One pile, about 2 feet high, said, this was also post Y2K, we are bulletproof. Bulletproof. Physical, we have barriers, we have Jersey barriers. By the way, I call the Jersey barriers Moscow barriers because that's against our way of life to have huge cement blocks blocking everywhere. All the way to cyber or physical cyber, etc. That similar height from utilities saying sky is falling. The truth really is the sky isn't falling, but we are not bulletproof. And because the system is interconnected, to use an idiom, we are as weak as the weakest link. Mm. Because the whole transmission, high voltage generation, we wheel it in three major interconnections in North America. So the weakest link in the generation, high voltage transmission, in our neighborhoods, local distribution systems, we can be potentially affected. The good news is, the sky isn't falling, and we have come a long way in the 21 years since. There are critical infrastructure protection called CIP, C-I-P standards since then, particularly after the 2005 blackout that blacked out 8 eastern states and 2 Canadian provinces, and North American Electric Reliability Corporation, NERC, mm-hmm. with delegated authority from Federal Energy Regulatory Council, FERC, has set up back then 8 regional entities in North America to audit, to enforce reliability security standards. And I had the privilege of being the chairman of the one in Texas, one of the 8, and also be on the board of the one that has oversight over pretty much mid-continent from Canada to Gulf of Mexico, middle part of our basically continent. And I can tell you that we have come a long way. There are not just checks of a checklist, but there is proactive measures to safeguard this critical infrastructure.
Well, that's reassuring. That's what I was going to ask you. You know, are these defenses that we may have coordinated on a national scale? And I think you've answered that there are industry-wide efforts to talk to each other and share defenses. And I guess part of it is, do we know enough to know what the Russian capabilities would be to know how reliable our current cybersecurity in this area of electrical distribution is? I mean, I realize there's some things you probably can't say, but are we pretty confident in our cybersecurity capabilities as countermeasures against an attack like that?
You know, confidence in this area is a sign of arrogance and ignorance.
Yeah.
And because we are always truthfully, with all humility, fighting the last war. We only know the threats that have already occurred and we have mitigated, and to predict, have foresight into emerging threats and into Trojan horses that they have already implanted in our systems, whether it's China, whether it's Russia, whether there are other, actually friendly nations for industrial theft. They have done that to steal from us, not just Beijing and Moscow or Pyongyang or Tehran or others, but also friendly nations to steal intellectual property, including the European Union, allies in the Middle East, allies in the Far East and South America. So it is they employ techniques that can sit there for many, many years. They're collecting information and intelligence, and we don't even know about it. And there's no way, because our chips come from overseas. The very few come from trusted foundries. Do we really know what goes into the chips? Do we know what software, what communication protocols are being used? Court, the truth is, only if it is high security operation that we dig into those. Otherwise, we don't. So yes, the answer is they can listen, they can eavesdrop, they can collect intelligence on our systems. And there have been many examples of that they have already done. And in the US, there are several agencies such as CISA. It came to big attention in the 2020-2021 since its director was fired. But Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CICA, FBI, Federal Bureau of Investigation, and also National Security Agency under the umbrella of Director of National Intelligence that happened after tragedies of 9/11 monitored those. And they look at tactics, techniques and procedures, and those are detection actions, incident response, and mitigation. And typically they dig deep into the past to develop an understanding and awareness what happened, forensics, and then how to conduct proactive threat hunting before it happens. So that's the early detection. But the truth of it is, no, we are always fighting the last war. Russia, to give you an example, Russian Federation state-sponsored advanced persistent threats use common but effective tactics, including they use spear phishing that they target specific things, even employees that may have access to critical resources within the organization. They can also use brute force, almost like a supercomputer, trying many things like the movie War Game, run all kinds of passwords on the system, or exploiting known vulnerabilities, because a lot of the software, whether it's the Microsoft or Apple, were not designed to run critical infrastructure on them. And our mail, our financial networks, and our operational systems, in a sense, our information technology, IT, operational technology, which runs our critical equipment, controls our critical infrastructure and networks, they are not necessarily built as a design criteria with strong security. So they gain initial access to these target networks. They can plant Trojan horses, others in there, and activate them as they will. The vulnerabilities that we know they have exploited in Russian state-sponsored actors include Cisco routers, Oracle, all kinds of stuff, Microsoft Exchange, everything you can imagine has been penetrated by them. And these are typically Russian state-sponsored, and they have their own in-house as well as other ones that they hire to do the bidding for them, that they can have an arm's length against from them. They also have shown that they can target operational technologies, industrial control system networks with destructive malware and customized malware that they go after. And this includes, the names may sound weird to your listeners, so I would say they have done it against Ukrainian critical infrastructures. They even started it before the attack in January and February of 2022. And even before, they shut down transmission and distribution, high voltage and low voltage, back in about 6 years ago and 4 years ago. So they're targeting, even in the U.S., they have targeted Russian state-sponsored actors, have targeted state, local, tribal, and territorial governments and aviation networks in September of 2020 through at least December of last year. And there are dozens of those that we have detected. And these are only the ones we have detected. And from all the assessments that I have had the privilege of being part of since 1998, we only detect roughly about 1/3 to 36% of all the attacks or all the Trojan horse implantations. And in terms of energy sector, oh my goodness, Russian state-sponsored actors, they focus on energy and power grid because that underpins everything else. And from 2011 to 2020, the Russian Federation attackers have had a multi-stage intrusion campaign that has actually collected, exfiltrated enterprises and control system-related data. Again, the sky isn't falling, but there are lots of, if you will, monkeys in the woods or birds in the woods that are doing things that may potentially hurt us.
Well, this is all a little unsettling. I mean, I guess I thought we had a, from the little I know, I thought we had a better handle on these things. I guess I thought we were tentatively confident, but it sounds like our confidence may be a false sense of security, because there are so many, it's so multivariate. There's so many different avenues of attack in so many different forms, some of which we know, some of which we suspect, some of which we probably don't know about. And so I guess from the standpoint of our listeners, they would want you to again speculate, Masoud, and tell us whether there's a good chance that potentially maybe tens or a couple hundred million Americans could find themselves suddenly, you know, starving and freezing in the dark with no way to call for help or get needed medical care, and all of our systems would shut down, food distribution and everything else, and suddenly we'd be thrust back to, you know, 1850 or something. Is that any kind of realistic possibility of that, or is that just out of the question that that could happen because we have enough defenses?
The good news is we do have enough defenses, and it's not just a single layer of defense, it's a layered defense. The organizations that I mentioned, as well as the critical asset holders and utilities and other entities, they have built layers of defense almost like layers of Swiss cheese. I know it's not reassuring to think of it as Swiss cheese, but if you think about, adversary can penetrate the holes in one Swiss cheese. How about two of them if they're not aligned? Three, four, five. So the likelihood of successful attack goes down the more layers you have. Even though no single layer or two layer are perfect, but the more layers that you have in that monitoring, assessment, security, protection, defense, does provide us that level of comfort. So the good news is this has changed a lot since Y2K in the last 22 years. However, we are not bulletproof. Small attacks, small Trojan horses can potentially create problems at a local area. Even with Ukraine attacks back in Christmases of 2016 and later, it was not all six distribution systems in Ukraine that were attacked. They were vulnerable. Only two or three were vulnerable because they relied on a variety of technologies that were not homogeneous. And the fact that you are not diversity in that sense, having different technologies, analog, digital, etc., they cannot, attackers cannot figure all of them. So the good news is sky isn't falling again, to be very direct without creating unnecessary panic, which is not really needed. But there is a lot more need for proactive protection, proactive monitoring, detection. companies in terms of detection, organizations, governmental level within the U.S., CISA, FBI, NSA, Director of National Intelligence, they have actually, they do and they create, and a lot of it is privately owned, actually more than 86-88% of critical infrastructure in the U.S. The 16 critical infrastructure we have are either owned at the state level or privately owned. They encourage and they help to create a robust and ongoing log collection and retention. Without having a centralized log and monitoring capability, we have limited ability to investigate post-mortem or in situ what's going on and detect threats. That's the first thing. They also look for behavior modeling, evidence or network or host base artifacts from known Russian-sponsored actors. And there are all kinds of assessments, tables under cybersecurity advisory, CISO, that the government provides, as well as CIO, CISOs of companies provide. Some of them, unfortunately, are small or mid-sized. They don't have the resources to do what we're talking about, Court. But if you have people who are not falling asleep at the switch, they can actually make this work. I think around January 11th, there was a cybersecurity advisory to understand and mitigate Russian state-sponsored cyber threats to U.S. critical infrastructure. That came out from the same three organizations, CISA, FBI, and NSA. And we have honeycombs. We have places like a sandbox. We can play with the attackers, send them to a place that they think is actually a place that they wanted to get into. But we are actually sending them to a sandbox to play so we can observe their behavior. So there are quite a bit of countermeasures that are available. And I've had the privilege of being part of many of them, creating them post 9/11 and after that. To give you a quick overview, the timeline of significant events that happened in Ukraine actually began long before Russian Federation attacked Ukraine. And it went on, my goodness, from like January 14th to February 23rd, 24th, and continued through February 27th before the attack. And they were all precursors to an attack, even though Putin said, nope, we are not attacking. The signatures to his preparation for an attack was there. I've done martial arts, not to make it personal, since I was 8. You can see a person telegraphing an attack, and any intelligence officer would know collectively what's going on. These are all like a tension building up on a multi-level game of chess that they're going after.
Well, Dr. Massoud, I mean, this is something we could clearly talk about much longer than we are. It's a big topic, but we are out of time, and we're going to have to leave it there. I guess the bottom line is there's not much that we as people, individual people, can do except to trust our government and the private sector to protect us as well as they can from these things, and hope that, that as you say, the sky never falls, and maybe we have some things to deal with, but they're not anything beyond our capability to deal with. But I want to thank you so much for being on with us on American Variety. It has been very interesting, and it's going to be an interesting topic going forward in the future here.
My pleasure. At your service anytime.
Yep. Thank you again, and thanks to all of you out there for listening. I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.